You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
You can support us on Patreon and join our Discord server at patreon.com/WTFolklore.
Happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, da-ha-dee-da-ha-dee-ho. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-da-ha-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
There you go.
Good to go.
Two clap.
Two clap this time.
Two clap.
That song is a lot longer now that we're in our 30s.
What song?
The electric slide at like a wedding or something.
Are there addendums?
Is there amendments?
I don't know that there are addendums. I mean, there might be. We did the electric slide at Cameron's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all in our 30s, like
sure.
Lower and mid to upper 30s as a group of former Barry Theater and improv people.
Mm-hmm.
And it followed a pretty intense long evening of dancing, so like tips to DJs out there, do the electric slide early.
That's your whole evening then.
Yeah, like we had been dancing as only theater kids can dance, which is to say exuberantly and with marginal skill.
Sure.
For quite a few hours at that point, and then they put on the electric slide.
Almost directly inverse to the exuberance, probably.
Yeah, indeed. And, well, there are some cases where, like, people could dance and we're still very exuberant.
Mm-hmm.
My goal at most weddings is to be more embarrassing than everyone else, so everyone feels, like, free to express themselves.
It's a service that you provide, free of charge.
Indeed. So by the time we got the electric slide, I think it was the normal length of the song. It's hard to tell. The DJ could have been very cruel. But we got partway through it, and there was a part where it's like, I'm just going to like walk off and leave this dance floor.
I gotta lay down.
Like, I can't do this anymore. And I was not alone in that sentiment. And I think that's what, like, a couple of people like started to move like they were going to leave, and then he ended the song. And I don't know that it was because that's where the song ended,
mm-hmm.
or if he just like read the room there and was like, no, I'm in control. This was my plan all along.
A test of endurance.
So that's my electric slide tangent. I don't know if that will keep in the show or not, but there you go.
Of course it will.
Great.
Anything for content.
It adds to the runtime, don't it?
Makes us look like we planned this out, padded this well.
We are obligated to deliver approximately 60 minutes of audio.
We sure try.
No one ever specified what that audio is. Can you hush?
Kitty. Sometimes we fall awful short, but, you know, these things happen.
I appreciate our method of putting our filler episodes inside of our regular episodes, so
yeah,
you can't
we have
skip
really
any of them.
Just combined the whole process now.
Right.
It's like,
that's something that maybe anime could learn from us, if you don't want large swaths of your episodes just skipped because they're filler. Gotta hide those nuggets of good content in there. All right, well, here's the show we're supposed to be doing for about 30 seconds before we get derailed again. Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
Got my shovel, shoes full of sand. Check out the tag, the name's Crime Weaver.
What's the shovel for?
Digging holes. Digging holes. Digging.
Let me see if this is a song lyric, maybe?
Are you familiar with the film Holes?
Yeah, starring a young Shia LaBeouf and some other people.
Shia LaBeouf was in that?
Yes, as the main character, Stanley Yelnats.
Young Shia LaBeouf and...
Sigourney Weaver
and Gus from Psych, whose real name is Dule Hill, also on the West Wing.
And, what the hell's his name? I already forgot, damn it.
Gotta have the IMDb page ready.
John Voight
is who I was thinking of. Yes.
Patricia Arquette. That's a stacked cast. I used to read Holes pretty regularly.
Yeah, it's
Same,
a good book.
Yeah, it's a very good book.
And I think the movie was fine.
Yeah, having just watched it in the past month, I don't remember why we did, but we started just here in this apartment, we started singing the whole song to each other every once in a while, what we could remember mm-hmm. of it. And then we're like, let's just watch this fucking thing. It's on Disney Plus. So we did. And it aged pretty gracefully. It's still a pretty fun film. Just a solid story and well told. But, as we also discovered, there is a universe where that is not the case.
Oh?
A dark timeline.
Oh?
Yes.
The screenplay for the film was written by the author of the book, based off of his book. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, it's probably the wise, like, you might need to train that author a little bit in some screenplay rules, but mm-hmm. yeah, seems wise.
The reason that this happened is because originally Disney tapped Richard Kelly, the author of the screenplay for Donnie Darko, to write a treatment for Holes.
An interesting yeah. choice on a lot of levels.
Indeed.
That was a pretty big movie at the time, right?
Yeah, it wasn't
that
bad.
Didn't that come out, like, around that year? 2003,
mm-hmm. 4? Via the Wayback Machine, we were able to find a PDF of this script, and it is dated December 17th of 1999.
Yeah. How's it feel?
Well, it takes place in a post-apocalypse.
Oh.
Cool. All right.
Do you remember the main character's name?
Yes.
Stanley
it's
Yelnats?
It's a big plot point.
Uh-huh. His name is Stanley Yelnats, which is mm-hmm. yeah. Stanley both ways, front yep. ways and backwards.
To palindrome.
In this script, his name is Stanley Kramer.
Interesting. Choice uh-huh. to change?
Good start.
So far, these are like...
This is a different movie
Two decisions.
I'm going to read this first page to you and then just give you some of the tidbits that we also found while we were digging through it.
Oh, please okay. do.
And that was a pun intended.
Yeah.
The digging of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Fade in. Exterior. Texas desert. Helicopter shot. Sunrise. We glide across the vast Texas desert, flowing into the purple sky like a conveyor belt of golden sandpaper. Narrator. Elderly voice. Once, when it was still early in the 21st century, there existed a prison in a sea of sand. All signs of life in this place had been destroyed by something terrible, and that something had dried up into the earth, and the earth was a prison for all mankind. We approach a desolate road, stretching off into the horizon as a lone school bus drives along, leaving a thundering blaze of dust behind it. We approach the school bus, where a lone figure can be seen through a dirty glass window. There was a young man named Stanley Kramer. He had committed a crime, and he was sent out into the depths of nowhere to be punished.
I do love this tell-don't-show writing.
Interior, school bus, next. Sitting handcuffed in the middle section of the school bus is Stanley Kramer, age 16, a handsome young man with blue eyes and blonde hair. He looks out the window, his head almost resting against the glass. He did not feel sorry for what he had done, but feeling sorrow is not adequate punishment for such a crime. Feeling sorrow does not absolve the crime from the memory of the victims, if the victims are still breathing. Stanley looks forward to the guard driving the bus as it begins to slow down. So that's just sort of the tone of what we're going with here.
All right. There are a lot of comments I have.
Uh-huh.
Remarkably
it was really hard not
different.
To interrupt you mm-hmm. repeatedly. That's very purple prose, huh?
Sure was.
Like, Gordy, you're more familiar with screenplays than I am. How common is it to have such descriptors?
I think it depends on who you are and who you're working with. Also... whether this was a shooting script or like sometimes for screenplays they will, you know, they'll have like the shooting script, which is what they are actually working from when they're shooting the movie, and then afterwards there's kind of like a cleaned up polished version.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure which version script. This is if you just wrote Donnie Darko
mm-hmm.
and were maybe like sought out for this, then I think you can get away with that a lot more. If you're like relatively new, then I think you don't get to do that as much, because the director will come back and say, why are you doing my job for me?
Yeah, and it felt like he was doing the actor's job a little bit there too.
Yeah, but yeah, so I think it just depends. I mean, stylistically, this is this has some decisions, but like overall, why are we doing this?
there are a lot of questions, like
especially when you consider the source material, which right. is again just really solid.
Yeah, like
everything already feeds into itself. Like it's a well, like self-contained mystery where all of the pieces are given to you over time and you can figure it out yourself, mm-hmm. and they all yeah. matter.
It was well-paced.
Yes.
Separated from the source material, it's very purple, and the narrator is definitely just like telling you stuff with the same sort of philosophical voice that you often hear at 16-year-old sleeping parties, like sleepover parties after midnight,
mm-hmm.
where like you're trying to be very erudite with your friends. Because I think a couple of those lines were supposed to land in a way that felt profound, and I
they sure don't.
I did not get what I feel the author was intending me to feel.
I'll give you an example of how some of the jokes are in this script.
Oh, please do.
I want to hear a Donnie Darko style joke.
When Stanley meets Pendansky, or Mom, who is the like counselor for his tent, Pendansky says, "My name is really easy to remember. Three easy words: pen, dance, key." And Stanley replies, "Or two words: penance and dyke." And there's a beat, and he says, "If you rearrange the letters a little." Pendansky smirks at this.
What a clever joke.
So clever.
You got him.
I'm getting the feeling that this author was the perfect author for Donnie Darko and that alone.
And literally nothing else.
he had the one good story in him and needed to kind of stick with that. Maybe he'll find another one down the line, but oof.
I have two other tidbits. One that I vividly remember Jerry explaining to me, because she read this entire script out of
Champion.
Morbid curiosity.
I have
the other
high
one
respect
I only,
for her. Please let her know.
The other one I only vaguely remember, and like half remember, so it might not be completely accurate, but I think it is. What were you going to say, Gordy, first?
Is Donnie Darko a good movie?
It's fine.
I haven't seen it.
It's fine.
I think, like I've told you before, it's an enjoyable film. It's worth watching. It is not the like pinnacle of cinema that the edgelords that praise it like to the heights mm-hmm. would claim.
I think it is the edgelord attention that makes me not want to see it.
It's an interesting film.
Like, it has neat ideas.
It's a really neat concept. I think it's put together pretty well. I think the director did a good job. The actors did a good job. I think it's worth watching. I don't think it ends cinema as we know it. That's reserved for Spider-Man mm-hmm. into the Spider-Verse.
In fact, few movies do.
True.
I do need to preface by saying that I am about to give spoilers for actual Holes if you haven't seen the movie or read the book before. This is your heads up to just skip ahead a bit, but in the original story, the plot is that they are digging all these holes to find the missing treasure of Kissing Kate Barlow, a gunslinger from the Wild West times.
Yep.
In this script, there is literally no mention of Kate Barlow.
That was, like, all those flashbacks were my favorite parts of that book.
Yeah, it's great. It's just a great story. And again, it just all fits so well together. Anyway, what they're doing here is like digging up the remains of the blasted society from the post-apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
But it's very confusing on like what the timeline of this fucking apocalypse was, because they dig up human remains.
Yeah.
That's like the first thing they find, rather than like the lipstick tube from the book and the movie. They find a human skeleton, but that human skeleton has bits of, recognizable clothing still. And the recognizable clothing is the uniform for Bob's Big Boy Burger restaurant.
Okay.
And we discover that this skeleton that they found is also Pendansky's wife.
What?
I... It just made me choke. If you want to do this story...
Yeah.
Go forth and do it. Does it need to be called Holes and need to be an adaptation of Holes?
It, well, I'll tell you, it isn't. So they got right. that one checked off at least.
Like, yeah, can like... can we not just say this is another movie that is
where holes are dug?
Yeah, like kind of inspired by the book Holes, but is not Holes
in the sense that it shares a setting and a shovel.
Yeah, in the sense right. that the screenplay writer saw the cover of the book and just went from there.
Apparently, yeah. Like, this is how a lot of kids do book reports when they're feeling really lazy, except he didn't even bother to go to Cliff Notes.
The second thing, and this is the thing that I only vaguely remember, but Jerry says that Stanley in this script has a sister, and I believe that the two of them are somehow linked to the bomb going off.
Like, and that was his... the end of civilization?
Yeah, and that's the crime that got him to this prison camp?
Well, that sort of makes that first line fall even flatter.
What? Wait, what?
If that's there's the a... case.
Hold on, back up.
Yeah.
I need you to run that by me again.
Yeah. And again, I'm only vaguely remembering this, so it might not actually be in this script, but I think that Stanley and his sister were somehow... partially responsible for the bomb that destroyed humanity, and now Stanley is sent to this prison camp in the desert.
As child?
As 16-year-old.
As child, they made the bomb. And did the bomb.
And ended the world.
But he does not feel bad about it, is what this first page specifies.
Also, what do you guys remember about Zero?
Zero is... like the grandson of the woman who cursed Stanley's family?
Yes, but like how he's characterized. How he acts.
I remember him being pretty small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And quiet maybe?
Yes, he doesn't speak a lot until he starts to get to know Stanley.
Yeah.
In this script he is literally indistinguishable from anyone else.
Great, perfect.
They all talk like they're the same person because they're all just written the same way.
That may have been the, like, now I want to rewatch Donnie Darko and, like, pick apart the writing style a little bit.
Yeah, to see how different everybody speaks from one another.
Right, because, like, I feel like that film, like, rode on the shoulders of its concept pretty hard. And so stylistically, that I don't think that would be particularly jarring in that.
Rather than the quality of its writing?
Rather than, like, characters.
Sure. Not everything is a character story.
Right, like, this was definitely more of a high-concept sort of story. So I think, like, within the style and the framing of that it wouldn't be quite as noticeable as in almost any other story. But now I'm really curious to see if, like, this guy just cannot write different characters. Although actors do help a lot.
Yeah, they can bring something to flat writing sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah,
like the, sure. the performance on the I just don't feel like you're committed to a sparkle motion was a pretty solid delivery mm-hmm. where that might read pretty flat on a script.
Anyhow, there's 20 minutes on Holes for you, listener.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I will post the link to this PDF on the Discord.
Please do, because I think I might follow suit with Jerry and...
Just and read the whole thing.
Yeah, like I'm
yeah,
curious.
So go ahead and join our Patreon for $1 if you want to see the script to Holes written by Richard Kelly.
Yep. Look, good on Disney for not just going forward with it because it shared the name and they could make a poster that looks somewhat similar to the cover of the book.
Yeah, I guess somebody deserves some credit for saying this
no.
this belongs in a toilet, not on the screen.
Because a lot of book adaptations, especially of books aimed for that specific age range, do not bother. Like, it's like the people who requested it didn't bother to read the book. They just knew that it was popular. So
yeah.
Anyone who could write the script who was also a name that was recognizable, they would just shoot that. I'm still butthurt about Ella Enchanted, by the way. Took the main, like, the one by major the plot point of, the, like, of the whole book, and in the trailer I saw that they were not keeping to it.
Well, at least that's a good heads up.
Yeah, like,
that's a time that a trailer served you well.
Between the trailer and the poster, I realized that this is not based on, like, it just shares the title and the one idea from the book, but nothing else. Anyway, let's read a folktale.
Okay.
Or try to, anyway. I can't speak for what you guys will do. Today we're going to be reading The Candy Cottage. This was suggested to us by Maddie, Petal, who very kindly scanned and sent us a PDF of this from a book. I believe this would count as an American fairy tale.
It's from the States.
It was printed in Illinois in 1933 and written by someone named May Furlong, who has no biographical information that I could find on the internet. Just other people with that name, and then a couple of photos of this book, like this story, and the illustrations from it, and some a couple others that she wrote. So she apparently just wrote a few fairy tales in the 1930s, got them printed up, and then disappeared from existence. So,
not to immediately tangent, but I'm going to. Have you guys noticed how awful Google is now?
Yeah.
Like, compared to when we were in school, maybe.
How so? In the quality of the results?
The quality of the results. It's so hard to find anything that you're actually looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is just like links to Pinterest now.
Everything is links to Pinterest. That is so frustrating. Yeah, I think they screwed up with their algorithm shifting all the time. Of course, I don't know how much of that is directly Google's fault, and how much of that is a result of the war between Google and companies like the one Gordy and I used to work for.
You're saying that you directly contributed to the way that the internet is now?
It's quite possible, because I did spend 3 years of my life being told to write for an algorithm.
I think what we did there was pretty far removed from what actual best practices were at the time, so I think we're clear on this one.
I mean, I tried to...
genuinely do not think we approached anything of any consequence, good or bad.
That's fair. I personally
just purely skirted by during that time.
And I personally did try to avoid following the rules of the company in regards to the writing, to do the radical thing of just trying to write something someone would want to read, which was incorrect. I found out in an interview for a promotion. Good content's not what you, like, you write for an algorithm, and good content is what follows, is what I was told. Yeah, so who knows? May Furlong could have a lot of information. It's just buried under several pages of irrelevant results. But thank you, Maddie, for scanning this in, because apparently I wouldn't have found it otherwise on Google.
Literally, it would be lost to time.
Yep. So are you two ready?
Yes.
All right. The Candy Cottage. Once there was a little girl named Jean who was very poor, had no parents, and was pretty lonely because she didn't have anyone to love her or play with her or take care of her.
Checks out.
Yep. That does sound like the emotion I would have as a result of that situation.
I just put myself in her shoes and, yeah, I felt lonely.
Her one pair of shoes, because she only has one pair of very worn shoes.
Yes.
She has one torn dress, so put yourself in that too.
Okay. Here I go.
She has no house. No bed.
Done. Let me just head outside real quick.
Yep. Get out there. You good?
Okay. Yep.
Cool. All right. No bed. And only one piece of cracker to eat. Unclear on the timeline that this cracker is supposed to last her.
What I know of crackers is that they don't necessarily keep.
I can get into this headspace.
You've lived that single cracker life?
I am about to move.
Again. That's true.
And so basically, we don't have a house or a bed.
Or crackers.
Or crackers, because we're kind of in the transitional phase where nothing is anything.
Sure.
You don't want to get groceries, because then you have to deal with those.
That can be a daunting space to find yourself, Gordy, but you should try and approach it optimistically and just look at it as infinite possibilities. That liminal space between living places.
Yeah, I
technically you live everywhere right now.
I love a good liminal space. Can you make your home there? Can you live in a liminal space?
I would watch liminal interior decorating. Like HGTV,
I would read
should...
Liminal Home and Gardens.
Yeah, can HGTV should really create a liminal show.
Can you live in the toilet of a subway? The most liminal space. Not for long.
Probably not for long.
That's Donnie Darko.
Maybe that's where he wrote the whole script.
Based on what I know of it, that sounds like Donnie Darko.
Just all liminal space?
Yeah, liminal spaces, living in an unsustainable paradigm.
Yeah, you got it. That's...
While a big rabbit teaches you about, like, math or evil or something?
Math and evil.
Is that what's happening in that movie?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Yep. It was an educational film for evil math. All right, so meanwhile,
right,
back with
Jean
in her liminal space, she was sad, so she decided to go wandering to find someone to love her and make her happy.
Proactive, I dig it.
Proactive, but it, like, don't make it someone else's job to make you happy. That's your job.
That's a fine line, though, isn't it? Like, you can make yourself happy by bringing happiness to someone else.
Oh,
but
for
then,
sure.
By extension, that person is giving you happiness.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Where do you draw the line?
Well, I think going out with the intention of finding somebody to make you happy.
Sure.
And to love you. Like, that's putting a lot of pressure on this imaginary other person.
Actively looking to become a burden. That's not great.
Well, that's also how you get into, like, rough relationships, right? Because you're just looking for anything to fill that hole.
Sure.
So don't do that. Look for happiness, but not for somebody to do it for you. So it was a beautiful spring morning. The birds were singing, and a little way into the dark wood where she was wandering, she heard a weird noise. She investigated it, because, you know, what's fear when
you
have but a cracker
when you have
to your
nothing.
Name? And she found a nest full of downy birds with their wide open mouths all crying, "I want my mother! I want my father! I want my breakfast!"
Is that like a hierarchy for birds?
Mom first, then dad, then breakfast?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the breakfast is clarification of the value of mom and dad to birds.
It is what they provide.
That's true. So their parents had been gone from the nest for quite some time, and the babies were very hungry, so Jean broke off a little bit of her cracker, but they were so hungry and whiny about it that she gave them all of it, just to shut them up.
She could have, well, I mean, this is a good deed that she's doing, so I don't want to, like,
crime
dissuade
it?
Her from it, but you could have just kept walking.
Instead of feeding the birds with your one cracker?
Right, like, your proximity to the sound is what is causing you discomfort.
Also, like, protein, right?
Yes.
What?
We're terrible people.
Saying you should eat the birds?
You got but a cracker to your name. How long's that gonna last you?
Split that in half, you got a sandwich.
What kind of cracker, though?
Is it Ritz?
If it's like a wheat cracker with, like, bits and seeds in it, that could last quite a while, actually.
Oyster?
Just nibble it.
Oyster cracker is nothing. Ritz cracker is going to make things worse, because while they're good, those are thirsty.
That's true. Then you'd need a Tyler to cup water in his hands for you, like his cat requires.
Is it a single Cheez-It?
That one's a cruel cracker, because you can't just have one Cheez-It.
Mm-mm. It's very Pringle-like in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a cracker that just makes you want more crackers. Gordy's cracker sounds like the best case cracker for it to be. Because it's like, it's got a lot of texture to it. And also isn't necessarily always super enjoyable to eat, so you can just kind of nibble on it.
It is purely just to give you something to do.
Yeah.
With your mouth.
It's a hobby cracker.
It's a hobby-grade cracker.
So the baby birds thanked her, and she was happy that they...
What does a professional-grade cracker look like, then? Like, what is a vocation cracker?
I think that would be the Cheez-It, yeah.
Yeah.
That's something you really have to dedicate some time to.
Some time, some energy, some effort. Cheez-It is the cracker of passion.
I think that is an accurate statement.
Do you ever just say words and hope that it was profound?
Yeah.
Because I feel like I just did.
You should write the next whole script.
You'll get there eventually.
Yep.
If you just say enough words in sequence.
Yeah, you too can have a profound opening to an adaptation of a film.
I can imagine holes opening with a narrator saying, Cheez-It is the cracker of passion. And then the song starts. Take it all, take
it all. I would watch a movie written by Tyler taking himself very seriously.
I'm more interested in rewriting Donnie Darko now.
Yeah.
With Cheez-Its.
Could we get a Donnie Darko written by the Holes author?
As a book adaptation of a film.
As a book, as a graphic novel?
I think he already did, and it's called Wayside Stories.
Did he write that too?
Oh, did he do that?
He
did.
That
makes sense. Oh, now I want to reread all of those.
Out quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been killing it. I did a deep dive after watching Holes, and I kind of want to read some of the other books afterwards. They sound interesting.
What else has he given to this world, this gift of a man?
Well, Holes and Wayside are the two big ones.
Right.
He wrote a sequel to Holes, starring some of the other kids from the camp, which is called Small Steps.
This is the Infinite Holes tangent episode.
Yep. His most recent one is from 2015 and is called Fuzzy Mud, which is about kids stumbling on a radioactive mud in their hometown that is giving everybody a crazy rash. The one that I wanted to read is called The Card Turner, which is just a story about a teenager learning to do card tricks and like card counting. Just a slice of life.
Yeah, that sounds solid.
I had not even considered any time in my life for even a moment that guy had continued to write books, and I don't know why. But that,
I'm kind of in the same boat, and I also don't know why.
Yeah.
That thought has
never, why would you just put out one banger and then just sleep for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
I mean, there are authors that do.
Did not consider... Yeah, there are. Joseph Heller, maybe?
Is I like of some of his other ones.
Some of
definitely
Joseph
not,
Heller's other books?
Just not to the extent of Catch-22.
Yeah, I mean, but it seems like he had, like, the one really, really big one, and then some
yeah,
others
that is
that
the
are
one,
like, that are
the
like
one
hit good,
wonder,
not,
as it were.
Yeah. But yeah, I've never considered, like, hey, what else did that guy do?
Anyway, back to this. the birds thanked her, and she was happy that they weren't hungry, and also that they weren't screaming anymore. Your call as to which of those to be more grateful over. And she kept walking. She comes to a broken fence with a strange little girl crying bitterly and holding her foot. Jean was like, hey, what's the matter? And the girl said that she had no shoes, and she hurt her foot, so Jean gave her own worn shoes, saying, sorry, these are shitty, they're all I got. And the girl
best
says,
best I can do.
Yeah, well, thanks, but what are you going to do? She said, oh, I'll be all right, thinking that this strange little girl, it never tells us what's strange about her. I don't know if it's just because she's a stranger or if she's just a real weirdo. But
maybe she's a mole person.
Yeah, figures that this weird ass with the hurt foot needed the shoes more than she did, which is displaying a concerning pattern of behavior that this girl needs to see some therapy about.
I mean, yeah, but... she's making the world a better place in her way.
She is. Like, these are acts of kindness, and they are well meant for sure. But, like, there comes a point where
they are detrimental to your own well-being.
Yeah, and the mask first sort of thing. You know, I could get into this, but I'm not going to. So she keeps going until she comes to a pretty cottage where there are children singing and playing in the garden. And a boy calls out, "Hey there, Rags! Aren't you afraid you'll blow away? Because kids suck." Although those are not terribly mean.
You look
mean.
Like a shitty kite.
As far as, like, mean kid insults go, this is definitely on the lighter end of the spectrum.
It contained no curse words, for instance.
Right. And it didn't, like, completely rip her apart. I mean, Rags is not a kind way to refer to anybody, but kids can get a lot meaner than this. She doesn't answer, but runs down the road. She didn't want to run away. She did want to play with the kids in the cottage garden, but she was very ashamed of her crappy dress and her bare toes. So she did what a lot of our protagonists do, and just burst out into tears. So as she was crying, she heard the softest, sweetest voice say, "Jean, let me out!" She looks around,
is it
but
one
she...
of the birds?
"Jean, you shoved me in your pocket without thinking about it. Free me!" She looks around, but she sees nothing but flowers in the grass, big oak trees, and a random bird flying by. So she asks, "Where are you?" And the voice answered that it was in the flower, and she looks down to find a pretty little fairy trapped in the petals of a lily. She wasn't thinking of her shitty dress anymore, because, you know, this is a lot more interesting. And she bent down to be a little less tall and imposing, and in one breath she asked, "Where did you come from? What is your name? Why are you so small? Why are you here?" Which is very accurate, children.
Yes.
So the fairy answers two of these questions. She says, "Well, I came from my high home in the sky," so we have a Seelie Court Fairy, "because I heard you call." So Jean says, "Well, I'm so glad you came, but I'm afraid I will hurt you and because you're so tiny." Also, I did double check, and there was no point at which this girl called this fairy, so red flag alert number one.
Yeah, I'm immediately suspicious.
Uh-huh. But this is a child.
This creature has ill intent, I think.
So she's afraid she's going to hurt her, and the fairy jumped up and then got taller and taller until she was the same height as Jean. "Didn't you wish for a little playmate? Well, here I am."
I'm not prepared to explain or defend this thought.
Good preface.
Yeah. when a fairy...
That's legally binding, what you just declared.
When a fairy appears and does something without even... Okay, whether or not they are explicitly asked, that is the same energy as when anyone says anything about the free market.
Well, it's a shame that you're not ready to defend that, because I have so many questions.
I mean, yeah. I'll talk about it. I just don't know if it is a defensible thought.
Take my hand now, Gordy, and just guide me down this road.
Sometimes when you have a thought, there's a point A and you leap.
Yeah.
Toward a point B that you sense.
I do get that.
More than you know is there, and I'm making a leap of faith here in my mind, because I think
it's like
Mario
game with invisible blocks.
I think when you say, "Wow, I would sure love a child, even if it's something weird," and a fairy pops up and says, "Well, I can do exactly that for you." That is the same. Like those are libertarians.
I see. I think.
Okay. Yeah. If you ruminate on that for the rest of the story and you got a little bit more to share, I would love to.
Does that track so far? Fairies are libertarians, I guess, is maybe the more like crystallized form.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that like overall thesis.
I'm searching for evidence to make it like really, really click, but but this is my working theory.
Yeah, as a log line, it would definitely make me curious about the rest of the paper. Like, as an abstract.
Let me confuse this even further with another metaphor.
Okay.
All right, you are all familiar with the rope climbing PE challenge.
Yes.
Gym class thing, where you have to climb the rope up
a
the
cruelty
ceiling.
To or, my or, spaghetti arms. Yes.
Right. To some line on the rope. I feel like what you have presented me, Gordy, is this challenge in a PE setting, but the rope has been, like, slicked with oil or something. So the rope, which is your thesis here, is tangible. I can reach out and I can touch it, but I can't hold on to it. It just keeps slipping out.
It's there. It's there.
I can't climb this yet.
If it were less oily or your hands were more spider-like and rough, maybe you could get there. Yeah, I'm in the same place. I have set myself up for this climb, and I don't know if I can get there.
Well, we'll check back in with you. Like, just interrupt us if you get a little further up on that rope.
I'm very nervous about this fairy.
As I feel as wise about any fairy after what we've learned of their kind.
Like, growing up not reading as many fairy tales as yourself, Carmen, I would probably be more afraid of vampires than fairies as a child.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the inverse now as an adult.
I feel like as a kid, I would have been all for all of this. Like, no sense of danger. But yeah, I just think as an adult, you start to be wary of the too good to be true situations.
Yeah, I feel like vampires are beholden to more rules than fairies are.
Yeah, they are definitely like the lawful evil, and fairies are more neutral evil. Or
like
maybe or true neutral, or like yep, like a libertarian.
I think the world view is the same. I think the end product, if you put libertarians in charge, and you put fairies in charge, I think
it would
you
be
end
not
up,
unlike a fairy mound.
I think you end up with like 4chan mid manifest or the road.
It's like just enough rules to look like a system, but not enough to truly function.
If you wish for a son that is half a hedgehog, and a fairy gives it to you, and then you say, this is not, I didn't really want this, I think you would get a lecture about personal responsibility.
Yeah, okay. I'm climbing this rope with you now.
I can set up little outposts around the edge of this thought, but I'm still trying to breach the center.
Now there's a similar amount of pedantry.
Yeah.
And well, actually-ing. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the fairy's whole deal.
Right. And there's a lot of like
twisting words in that way.
Right, yeah. And there's a lot of like not just letting something be, but having to pick it apart and take it like you can't just let someone, you know, say, I wish I had a kid, even if it was half a hedgehog. You have to, like, pick that apart and then give them that exact thing and then see what happens.
Right. Literally as a punishment. Just for having the thought.
Right, yeah. This is why you can't, like, say
How dare you even consider such a world? Here, now it is yours.
Do you like it? No? Well, here are the many reasons that's your fault as a character problem. Alright, so...
Anyway, how is this fairy gonna fuck us over?
Well, she grabs the kid by the hand and runs and dances all the way down the hill. So we're not really, like, waiting for consent or a response to this. Just, you wish for a playmate, here I am. Yoink. So they come to a turn in the road and they follow a path, probably chosen by the fairy, through a garden with great yellow sunflowers and red poppies. And everywhere the flowers would nod and beckon to the fairy child and Jean. And that gives me horror movie vibes out the wazoo. Like, I know it's supposed to be this really charming image of these flowers, like, calling and beckoning, but I cannot see that outside of the context of a horror film.
I mean, it's scary even in Alice in Wonderland, and it's supposed to be whimsical and fun there.
Right. There's a way to do whimsy.
The flower sequence in the animated movie made me uncomfortable as a kid, just because of I don't like seeing flowers act this way.
You don't trust their intentions?
It's incongruous. Smoking caterpillar? Sure, whatever. Cat that can teleport? Okay. Like, flowers that pick themselves up out of the ground and dance? Fuck off.
I think I am just instantly suspicious of anyone who wants my presence that eagerly.
Yeah.
Especially without knowing me. There's nothing trustworthy about you wanting to hang out with me. No thank you, goodbye. At the end of the path, there was a house made of candy, ice cream, cakes, nuts, and fruit. And it was called the Candy Cottage, because we are very good at naming things. Also, that's the title of the story.
Yeah, I mean, apt.
The can't just like let it be. We do have to specifically call out. This is the Kennedy Cottage, the one that I'm writing about.
It isn't just that it is this thing. We do call it that, just so you know.
Right. Like, I'm not just saying the Candy Cottage to have a placeholder title for my book. It is the name of the cottage.
Read the fucking plaque.
Jean was starving, because she'd had a single cracker for an unspecified period of time that then got eaten by birds. And she was delighted, because, yeah, who the hell isn't delighted in a candy situation? So she whispers, oh, if I could just have a little bit of all that candy, little playmate, which is now the name of the fairy, capitalized. And the fairy said, well, of course you may. More will come
capital
in its
L,
place.
Capital P?
Yep.
Oh, oof. I don't know how I feel about that.
Again, we're in a horror film that is way more effective than any, like, actually intended horror film. Someone writing whimsy for children, I think, is a lot more capable of getting a true horror script done than someone sitting down to write horror. So Little Playmate broke off a piece of the candy cottage that was made of red and white stick candy, and another stick candy appeared in its place immediately. They go inside, and there are chairs made of chocolate and tables made of caramels, and the doorknobs were little round buns with raisins stuck in to make them look like tiny faces with eyes and nose and a mouth. Take me, eat me, Jean, called tiny voices.
I have been waiting for the Wonka gauntlet to begin, and I feel like we've arrived.
Here you go. She was surprised that the round bun raisin doorknobs could talk, but she picked off two buns without thinking anything more of it, and then she ate the raisin eyes first, and then the mouth, and then the whole head. So you are presented with some semblance of sentience.
Uh-huh.
And these buns. And not only do you take them at their way too eager word to be eaten, these vor buns, but you do it slowly and pluck out their eyes first.
She's got her own issues to work out, too.
Yeah, there's a lot to parse here. New doorknobs sprang up in their place because this was a fairy cottage and all the things were enchanted, and it doesn't matter if you slowly eat out the eyeballs of the creature that was asking you to eat it a moment ago. There was a table of caramels that was decorated with pink and yellow gumdrops, and it was spread for a party. There was a strange ice cream that looked soft enough to eat, but it didn't melt, and some of it was shaped like a dish to hold cakes and more ice cream, so a concerning ice cream-esque goop. Like a sugary Play-Doh, I guess. And Jean and Little Playmate sat down and ate the nuts and the candied fruit and the cakes and all the dishes that were holding them, and everything kept, like, showing back up again. So I'd eat it and it would pop
really
back in.
Really do not like Little Playmate.
Yeah, Little Playmate has a lot of concerning energy.
That's, I mean, the name, the energy, the presence, kind of, the more I hear Little Playmate, the worse I feel about it.
And you also, like, you don't eat the fairy food. Number one rule. Don't eat the food in fairyland.
Yeah.
Around the room. Yeah, like, no, don't do it. Around the room, there were beautiful papers with pictures of huge apples and oranges and plums and bananas, but when Jean touched the papers, she felt the round and softness of real fruit. She gave a gentle pull, and then there were apples and grapes in her hand, and new fruit filled the pictures. Jean, don't you want to come upstairs? Asked Little Playmate, a leading question, if I've ever heard one. And for the first time, Jean noticed a stairway of perfectly clear crystal going up to a second floor. It frightened her a little to look down through the clear stairs, but Little Playmate held her hand so she didn't cry or hold back. Just went right on up. They landed in the biggest, sunniest playroom with toys and a merry-go-round and ladders and everything kids like. Like ladders. Kids love the shit out of some ladders.
And chutes.
Maybe the chute in there. But definitely the ladders, everyone's favorite part of that game.
Well, right, but that's because it's a board game. If you had to climb a ladder, climbing back down isn't fun. Shooting down is.
This story very specifically mentions only ladders. So apparently,
that is a shame.
Yeah, apparently it's like, ladders are what's cool for kids.
I know that she is a child, and they're therefore not as likely to ask this question, but if I were in this position, I feel like at this point I would just be shouting, "What do you want from me?" What is the price for all this?
So Jean gave a little cry and ran to a corner where there was a family of dolls living in the largest dollhouse ever, with furniture, rugs like a real house, even food in the pantry. There was a father doll, a mother doll, a big brother doll, a sister doll, and a baby doll. She picked up the pretty baby doll, and then all the dolls cried at once, "Come and play with us!"
No.
No, she must play with us! And Jean turned to see five identical baby bunnies with soft white fur, pink eyes, pink silk lining in their ears, named Fluffy, Puffy, Stuffy, Muffy, and Cuffy.
Do they have names?
I guess so. Or the knowledge is being dropped into her brain by forces unseen. Also, poor Cuffy was definitely the afterthought of the...
I am Team Cuffy.
Yeah, I mean, that is my favorite of the bunnies, but from the name, definitely the afterthought. Like, Puffy's not, you know, I guess with a fluffy, puffy tail, Puffy
was
could
be.
Was
there a Guffy?
No, Stuffy seems like maybe not a flattering name. Really, only Fluffy is a flattering name here.
Mm-hmm.
Puffy, I can kind of see if you're thinking, like, the soft version of Puff as opposed to the, like, has been stung by a bee recently version of Puffy. Muffy is a little bit of an afterthought, but I could see that. Cuffy definitely feels like a, well, what letter sounds good with Uffy? No, she must ride on my back, cried the rocking horse as he galloped past. All the toys laughed and talked like people, but they looked like real playthings. So Jean and Little Playmate played with all of them. They played house, and they played school, and they played a lot of other games that were listed specifically all afternoon. And Jean forgot how badly she'd felt that morning about not having anyone to play with her. And apparently forgot super hard about not having any parents or home or parents. Because that doesn't get mentioned as a thought that she has. So she calls out to Little Playmate to come see the pretty dress that had just appeared on her. With, like, lots of ribbons, and she's got new slippers with silver buckles and some hair ribbons and a silver heart necklace that had just suddenly appeared around her neck. But Little Playmate didn't answer. She looked around, and Little Playmate was nowhere to be seen. All the toys tried to help her find Little Playmate, searching the entire house top to bottom, and they could not find her anywhere. So she sits down and cries, as you do. And all the toys tried to comfort her, and they told her, hey, it's okay, you can stay and play with us forever. So she's relieved, and she hugs them all.
I know I'm not saying much, but that's just because I am sitting here just feeling nervous energy.
I'm waiting to see where this breaks.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
The sun was setting. Jean leads the way back to the cottage, saying, hey, let's have our tea. A cottage on the inside was lit by big fireflies, and she and all the toys ate, and there was a cute exchange where the baby toy wanted more candy and the mom toy said no. Haha, so relatable.
And then it's pretty cute.
Yep. And then one of the bunnies said, hey, come out to the garden, and all the bunnies will dance for you in the moonlight. I wish you would, said Jean.
No.
So they all go outside, and they set up a maypole. And the bunnies.
I want the simulation to end here, and some adult or teacher comes out and says, "We've all made a lot of mistakes in this, this is today."
Precisely where you went wrong.
And all the bunnies danced around the maypole with ribbons made out of moonbeams, and they sang a pointless song that wasn't worth transcribing. The mother and the father dolls led the way back to the playroom at the end of the dance, where there was a little white bed in a corner for Jane, and she said goodnight to all the toys, and the baby doll wanted to sleep in her bed, and the parent dolls didn't say no, so they all went to bed. After everyone was asleep, the moon looked in at the window, and Little Playmate slid in on a moonbeam, tiny again. She kissed Jean's cheek, then ran a moonbeam up and back to her, or ran up the moonbeam and back to her home in Fairyland. And because she was always sweet and kind, Jean stayed in the candy cottage forever and ever with the toys as her only companions. The end. So this is a propagandized tale of the perfect fairy kidnapping.
Yeah.
Yeah, this child will serve some purpose someday.
This is taxes. This child is taxes.
This kid is future taxes. You're absolutely right. This fairy was just securing assets by having this house eat this kid.
Because where this tale ends now, it's a largely pointless tale that doesn't teach any particularly great lessons. Because, yeah, she was sweet and kind, not, like, excessively so, but for sure, some.
But all of the rewards for that were superficial.
Right, like, you expect... What I was expecting heading into this was for those birds to show up and save her when this turned out to be a bad situation.
I mean, I can tell you that they are in our version.
Because there were a lot of, like, little bird mentions. I like the idea that the fairy was actually in hiding in the lily because of that bird that flew by randomly. Like, she was escaping surveillance.
Just needed a ride back to her fucking headquarters.
Right. And I would, in our remake of this, I would make that bird the parent of the baby bird.
I don't even think it needs
to
be remade. It just needs an epilogue to clarify.
Yeah, it needs to be continued. Because, like, this is a good start to a terrifying situation. It just hasn't been, like, explored to its logical conclusion. This is fairy propaganda. I am deeply concerned about the whole orphaning situation and the laissez-faire approach she has to that.
Yeah.
Because the way it's set up, like, she doesn't have any parents, and she doesn't have any house.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that would maybe have been a long-standing issue, given how she is behaving throughout this, because there's not, like, grieving happening. But she has only a single piece of cracker, which suggests to me that this is a little bit more recent. And she, like, woke up sad that morning about being lonely to go and decided to go finding someone to love her. So it just feels to me like maybe this orphaning happened a lot closer to the opening of this tale. And I am a little concerned about her state of mind. Though maybe it happened earlier and the cracker's just, like, the last of the food that she was able to take in a little gunny sack out of her parents' house, and then without, like,
mom's... It's the only thing that she could fit in her shoe.
Yeah, well, like, if it's been a bit since her parents offed it, and she's just been, like, living it alone with the last of the stuff that she was able to carry out of their house before the creditors came looking for it, maybe, like, this last bit of cracker being the only thing left of her family, that's what when the loneliness finally hits. Because the suddenness of her, like, feeling lonely and deciding to do something about it just seemed odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
What can we give her for this journey?
Like, as far as a better conclusion goes?
What can we give her at the start that smooths this out a little bit for her? Or do we want to even do that? What cool thing or power or toy or gun does she need to go into this with that gives us some action, some romance, and then somewhere in the middle, I don't know, something with heightened tension?
I mean, I felt the tension once the little playmate entered the scene. For romance, we could definitely pull back the kid who... called out, "Hey, little rags, aren't you afraid you're gonna blow away?" Because, like, as far as mean kid comments go, like, that could have just been a very flippant attempt at an introduction. It's not particularly pointed. Like, it's not kind to comment on someone's clothing like that, but it's not particularly pointed. And it could have just been an attempt to be like, "Hey, I see you're kind of in distress."
Is this a kid neg?
Yeah, is this a situation? Or, like, what's the deal here? I don't know. It didn't feel as mean-spirited as I think it was intended to. There are definitely kinder ways to approach a stranger. But, like, maybe that kid realizes that what he said was definitely not taken well, and that's on him, that he was not as thoughtful with his word choices as he could have been. And he, like, goes after to apologize and try again better to be like, hey, like, no, I actually meant to be, to just, like, do you need help? Do you need charity? Or are you cool with how this is?
And then I think I have an idea.
He catches the kidnapping at the end. Yeah?
Yeah, for an epilogue, just to tie that together. Mm-hmm. Maybe the birds alert these children, like this gang of little rascals, to her plight. And they help free her from this fairy prison that she doesn't realize is a prison because she thinks that she's getting what she wants, but she ends up getting what she needs, which is a support group.
Right. Actual.
A support network.
Actual companionship and also some nutrients.
Yes.
Like maybe some proteins occasionally. And not just fruit and ice cream. Yeah, because she's gonna get sick. After a short period here, so I think
after a day,
yeah. So I think that would be like where to keep like you. The audience knows something's off with little playmate, but the kid absolutely does not. Because you know, as a kid, I would be all for this. A magical fairy showed up and took me to an ice cream house. Down for
with toys that talk to me.
Yeah, 100%. Bunnies that dance with moonbeams. Hell yeah.
Weird, but I could get with it.
Weird, but it comes with ice cream. And as a kid, and even a little bit as an adult, there's a lot I will put up with for ice cream.
Sometimes makes that's a lot enough. Of difference.
So yeah, like, I don't think a lot. If I were to adapt this, I wouldn't change a lot. I would maybe clarify the orphaning situation in the beginning, mm-hmm. and maybe give her some more human emotions about that part. As opposed to just sort of an abstract, I want someone to love me and play with me. Like, maybe that's the only way that she knows how to express that, but we showcase the more turbulent emotions underneath. And then we continue from here with, like, more of the stuff that feels whimsical to her, but starts to unsettle the audience more and more. And then she starts to get sick, and we see the kids mounting a rescue attempt, and like it's a big temptation for them too. So I think your idea there about having this ragtag group of kids would offer a really unique and interesting opportunity to like really play with the weaknesses of children.
Yeah, it would be like if Willy Wonka was also a rescue mission.
Right. As it probably should have been. Willy Wonka might be a fae. Kidnapping children.
They came willingly.
Yeah, so did Jean. Kids are easy to trick. They are. Especially when you have ice cream.
They are.
Like, you have to train them to not trust the ice cream man. Or people with candy. And it's a huge temptation, so that training doesn't always stick. I think they did, like, an experiment with that. So yeah, it'd be fun to, like, explore maybe the ragtag group of kids, their own issues and things, and then how they succumb and break free of this candy temptation to save a stranger that they saw for just a few moments only because that's the right thing to do. Either of you have any other thoughts on this one?
I don't.
No, I think that's a good place to leave it.
Gordy, any further trips up the oiled rope of libertarian fairyland?
Not really. Nothing more concrete other than the ending of this story has solidified this view for me.
All right, well that's gonna do it for us. Another horror movie for us to write down the line.
Yeah.
So thank you all for listening. Thank you to Maddie for sending us the PDF of this story. So now we have another screenplay to work on. Thank you to all of our patrons for sponsoring the show. You too can become a patron for as little as $1 a month and then join us in the Discord where we chat about all kinds of things. And you'll see a link to a PDF of the original Holes script. So that's worthwhile, right? Thank you to our top tier patrons. Maxwell, Biblio Princess, Trickery Treats, Heirius, Pink Nectarie, Midori, Baby Grandma, Becca, a Friendly Lobster, Kelly, the Phantom of Old Jenkins is here inside your mic. Oh shit. No one who had ever seen Catherine Morland in her infancy would have supposed her to be born a heroine. Her situation in life We'll get the rest of that later. Katarina, funky little strawberry. Lemur, spaghetto drinking deep at the trial of gender fluids. Caitlin, Danielle, Wyatt, a moth in a cult robe. Olwyn, queen of terrible taste. Allie, Jucifer, Cobus Cat, it's Vespa. Versus keeper of too many OCs. Pyrus, Nathan the Scott, is getting married 2022. Congratulations.
GG.
Alex, banjo bug. Dave, winning games of Connect 4 in two moves or less. Maya, Gray, Goetic Prince of the Arcane. High Listus of Wimbus. Yahweh Yahweh, little smorgasbord. Haley, Dominic, Justin. Who am I, 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 who am I? Izzy, Heather Hyde, Meow Lady of the Cult of Cricket. And Jenna. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you always, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
We're What the Folklore, and that's how it works.
Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, da-ha-di-di-ho. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, she lived happily ever after.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have story suggestions for us, please send them to wtfolklore@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed our show, please rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts.